I wanna go where the moon shines bright. I wanna dance under the stars tonight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the moon. I am your host for this evening, Lawrence Ray, and I am joined today by my esteemed co-hosts, Ricardo Martinez and Jerry, and a very special guest, Mauro Perez. So today, German police attempt to seize $63 million of Bitcoin. Nigeria bans crypto, or does it? Is the Bitcoin network actually getting overloaded? And more. Stick around to hear the news. But first off, I guess I'll start, Ricardo, with you. How are you doing this week? How's it going? Anything interesting going on?
I'm doing fantastic. And yes, yesterday I recorded an interview with Colin Harper, who's a writer for CoinDesk, and we published it this morning on our YouTube channel.
Nice. Okay. Well, yeah, definitely head over and check that out. It's good to see the different content you bring with different people around the globe. And Jerry, I know that you've been up to quite a lot, but how's your week been?
It's been pretty mixed, you know, quite stressful, getting less and less sleep, you know, since we had the baby. So I think on that front, thanks, man. It's a great feeling, a great experience, you know. Happy the baby's here, you know, we're doing tons of bonding, and you know, it's all good.
So I think people can just hear from, you know, the fact that you're more tired. They immediately would have guessed from listening to the first podcast that you've had a baby, for sure. And well, I guess I should probably give you, Mauro, a quick introduction. So for anyone listening, Mauro is BitRefill's marketing manager, proud Argentinian and resident of Spain. And we'll be doing an interview with him later on in the podcast. But for now, how are you doing, Mauro? And are you excited to be with us today?
Doing good. As much as I can in COVID land here in Spain. Situation pretty bad regarding that. We cannot do anything. Lots of restrictions, but doing good with Bitcoin and BitRefill, and that's my connection to the rest of the world, and very happy to be here with you guys.
Awesome. Yeah, I think crypto going up is pretty much the only thing that's kept me happy during this this lockdown time. It's the only saving grace, isn't it? Nice. Okay. Well, glad to have you. So I suppose, well, what we'll do is we'll move swiftly on to the news area. And each of us, or myself, Ricardo and Jerry, have brought a news piece we'll discuss. And obviously, feel free to join in, Mauro. So I'll let Ricardo start off this week, if you're happy to do so, with your news piece you'd like to discuss with us.
Sure. I wanted to discuss the German police seizing $63 million in Bitcoin from a hacker. They say they seized it. The major problem is the reason it's in the headlines is that they don't have the password and the hacker refuses to give that to them. So they really haven't seized anything. To me, it demonstrates the power of Bitcoin censorship resistance. And I think Satoshi would be proud hearing this story, even if the Bitcoin was gathered in an unsavory manner. I mean, obviously hacking is not a good thing, but the fact that they couldn't take his funds from him, to me, is just really remarkable.
Yeah. I when I read the story, it kind of brought a smile to my face. And that's not to say that there's any sort of approval of what the guy did. But I remember reading it, and they spoke about how it had gone up in value, and how when he'd actually carried off these like fraud attempts and stuff, it obviously was worth a fair bit less. And then obviously now it's worth a lot more in dollars. But I liked at the end that sort of the government, I think it was the German government or whoever it was, said that they couldn't access it, but they could definitely guarantee that the fraudster won't have any access to it ever in the future, or something to that sort of level at the bottom of the article. And I kind of just laughed and thought, well, we'll see. We'll see about that. But it kind of just speaks, doesn't it, to speaks volumes really to the level of safety you can have if you kind of take control of your finances and put your fiat into cryptocurrency, whether it's 1% of your worth, 5% or 100%.
When I saw the headline, I was like, this can't be real. You know, it sounded so, you know, so silly, so ridiculous, because you say you seized the Bitcoin. What exactly do you have? Probably it's totally clickbaity, you know, headline. And like Ricardo said, it's just, you know, testament to the power of Bitcoin to be, you know, censorship resistant to, you know, any kind of, you know, tyranny or, you know, people trying to take, you know, take your wealth away from you. Although not like you said, we do not approve of the way he, you know, got the Bitcoin. But yeah, basically, this is what Bitcoin is all about, you know, censorship resistance in all forms.
Yeah, I was going to say that the authorities are learning how Bitcoin works real time, and journalists too, you know. I imagine the journalist writing that piece, the police seized. But shortly after seeing the comments and realizing that they didn't really seize the Bitcoin, probably they're looking at the balance, and they still think in the way of the old world, but they will learn fast.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the message here is, obviously you can use Bitcoin cryptocurrency for good or bad. You can use dollars for good or bad. You can use pounds for good or bad. You can use anything. And I guess the fact that the Bitcoin's being used is a testament to its quality, really, I suppose, as a currency. It's almost a promotion for it in that way. But no, I love like sort of slightly FUD-ish news pieces like this, where there's kind of almost a positive spin from it or something interesting to see from it. I guess it comes into my news piece for this week, segues perfectly to a degree. The one I have is from Cointelegraph, and it's basically entitled Bitcoin Mempool Clogs Up with 125,000 Transactions Waiting. Now, the way the article's written is it kind of like at the beginning tries to make it out that, you know, the Bitcoin network sort of almost ceased to a halt or something like that, and that, you know, the world's going to burn. But realistically, it's not the case. And I guess for any sort of beginners out there, the mempool, the easiest way I guess to say it would be, is kind of like a waiting area for the Bitcoin transactions to go into before it gets picked up by a miner and put into a block on the chain. I suppose that's probably the simplest way. Essentially, the Bitcoin network, I suppose, is seeing quite a spike in transactions because of the volatility. And that's what they're trying to pick up on here. But what I kind of took from this was, the article itself is making out that something small is a large situation and a large problem. But overall, the Bitcoin network is slowly sort of seeing fees go up over time and having sort of slight congestion here and there. And I suppose the more adoption we get, likely the more that will happen. So my question to you guys is, I guess, why do you think from this we haven't seen further adoption or embracing of the Lightning Network, which kind of helps drastically with the fees and the speed of transaction? What are your thoughts there?
I think that the fees aren't bad enough yet. With the improvements that SegWit has made, we're not seeing like $50 fees. And if you're patient, if you can wait 24 hours, you can still get a transaction through, you know, for like 10 sats per byte or something like that. It's the fees aren't such a crisis right now that people are incentivized to move to the Lightning Network. That's what I think.
I agree with Ricardo, and the fees aren't that bad. You know, when you consider, you know, in 2017 where the fees were going as high as $200, you know, $300, you know, depending on who you ask, it's not that bad. Also, when you consider the price of Bitcoin now, I think the Bitcoin network is, you know, has handled all the, you know, the congestion really well. You know, when, like I said, in comparison to 2017. Then second point is regarding Lawrence's question, why have we not seen the adoption of Lightning Network? It's simply because people aren't as, you know, tech savvy as we think. You know, people still struggle as it is, you know, to send Bitcoin transactions. Now, you can imagine how, you know, difficult it would be for, you know, the regular users to try to, you know, learn how to lock funds, you know, on the Lightning Network before they can send out, you know, Lightning transactions. So I think it will take a while before we start seeing people, you know, begin to send out, you know, especially when, you know, Lightning is still in, you know, active development, you're still working on the UI and UX, you know. So it will take a lot of, you know, improvement in the user experience before we see Lightning Network adoption. So that's what I think.
What I think is that the Lightning Network needs to be abstracted from the user. Like a Moon wallet, for example, the mobile wallet, that you have only one balance and you can pay on-chain or Lightning. That's the way to go, right? And I'm seeing a lot of interest lately on Moon and all the good Lightning wallets, Phoenix, etc., Blue Wallet. I think it's gaining a lot of traction these days. It's gonna be much more when we hit $50 fees or so. But right now, a lot of people do not care about the fees because they are feeling geniuses trading on Binance and stuff, and they see that they are making a lot of money, and they don't care. They pay 10, 15, whatever Binance charges them, which sometimes is a robbery because the network sometimes is not that busy, but they still charge you whatever they want, and people pay happily because Binance coin made 1,000% in a month, you know? They don't care. So, but we're going in the right direction. And even Lightning will not be the final layer for the consumer. Eventually in 3-5 years, it will be a layer for between important nodes, but there will be more layers. So it's we're building the Bitcoin technology stack.
Yeah, I think you've definitely on to a point there. I think all of you, my query there, I guess it shows that Bitcoin overwhelmingly, I suppose, or mainly isn't being used for like the small day-to-day transactions or anything like that yet. Whether it, I assume it will, but as you say, once these sort of layer two, layer three solutions are built on top of it, I mean, obviously no one's necessarily going to get a coffee, or I'm sure some people are, but not many people are buying like a $2 coffee and paying a transaction fee that's higher than the $2. But with Lightning right now, they can do that and pay a negligible fee and have it done like that and get their coffee. So I suppose I think that what you guys are saying as well is that we're seeing sort of quicker adoption, which I think is true from what I can see. And obviously we should be there, but we're just not quite there yet. And the answer, maybe not user-friendly enough, not enough of a reason yet to do that. Fees aren't quite high enough. And maybe people aren't just quite ready yet to give up on their fiat. But seeing how quickly 2020 changed everything by the end of this year, who knows, I guess. But yeah, Jerry, what's the next news piece that you'd like to discuss with us today?
I'm sure you guys must have heard that the Central Bank of Nigeria, they decided to, you know, stop this. Central Bank of Nigeria sent out circular to all the banks in the country saying that they should not facilitate, you know, crypto transactions. They should not process any payments that involves cryptocurrencies. So, and that has been kind of a major blow because now it kind of like put the space, you know, moves the space in Nigeria, the cryptocurrency space in Nigeria, you know, two steps backward. Now everybody's scrambling, you know, because people in Nigeria are already used to, you know, having to easily, you know, convert from crypto to fiat and straight to their bank account. Now they are not forced to go on the ground and start having to deal P2P like back in the days in 2016. So it's just seeing how all this evolves, basically.
I saw about Nigeria's circular, and yeah, it was kind of a shame to see that happen. It's only inevitable, really, that this kind of stuff's going to happen because governments are sort of scrambling, aren't they, at the moment to answer and kind of come up with something that sorts out this issue. To them is an issue that basically Bitcoin is taking over and kind of almost, you know, going towards replacing their own currencies, and they can't really have that, I guess, in their eyes. Albeit I did see that, I think it was a senator, I saw on Twitter someone quoted that a senator had said that basically, what they were trying to get at was that they kind of admitted defeat almost. I think someone shared it internally. But yeah, I also saw an article, and I reported about this on the news of the week as well, that basically was showing that Bitcoiners in Nigeria and other crypto enthusiasts have moved over to peer-to-peer exchanges quite well, and a lot are just migrating over to that, which almost kind of pulls you away from centralization and kind of goes towards the decentralized goal anyway, really. So I suppose it's almost kind of a good thing in a way. I guess it's not really for the many people, many businesses, but there's always a good side, I guess, to something. And that's definitely one of them, to see people power and communities and people doing more peer-to-peer kind of transactions.
Yeah. So here's one thing that a lot of people might not know. one of the reasons why they started actively hunting cryptocurrencies is because of remittances. So people, Nigerians used to, going to Western Union to send money abroad, receive money from abroad. And remittance dropped by over 50% in 2020 from, I think, $144 billion to about $45 billion. And I think that got them all shook. And they felt like they had to take some action because now everybody's, if you want to send money abroad, you want to send some money to someone in the US, you can send and but get some Bitcoin, send it through Cash App, and the person gets, gets the Bitcoin, converts to, USD, and that's done. No crazy fees or, no uncertainties and stuff like that. So, and for a country that's, struggling to stay afloat economically, I think the CBN Act, it was a knee-jerk reaction, basically. They could have taken advantage of that, of, this technology and see how they could use it to their own benefit. But, they decided to, out of fear, decided to take a much more drastic action. And it's funny because the SEC in Nigeria, about 5 or 6 months ago, gave the kind of trying to formulate, some regulatory framework for cryptocurrencies, gave an totally contradictory, opinion about cryptocurrencies that we thought would, usher in a new kind of welcoming. We were hoping that we'd see, cryptocurrencies, formulation of positive or a more welcoming legal, kind of a regulatory policies that will favor the cryptocurrency industry in Nigeria. But the CBN, just took us all by surprise. And while I understand their fear, it was basically stupid. And the Naira is going to fall whether they ban Bitcoin or not. So I don't know, man. It's just so stupid.
The governments with weak currencies are going to be the first ones disrupted by Bitcoin. And that's what we're seeing. In Latin America, we saw the exchange Buda get kicked out of both Chile and Colombia. And they actually ended up challenging the central banks in the court system, and they emerged victorious, and they were actually able to reestablish their business with support of the bank. Like the courts ruled that they had to give them a bank account and stuff like that. So I'm hopeful for Nigeria. I don't think this is going to be like a long-term thing. I think they're going to realize the errors of their ways.
Yeah, 100%. I guess you can either innovate and sort of embrace new technologies, or you can try to stop it and suffer the consequences. It's kind of the way I see it. And a couple of governments are trying to sort of prevent innovation, and a couple aren't, and we'll see which ones win, I suppose, is the answer to that one. But yeah, I guess, after that's a serious topic, I can move us on to the next segment in the podcast. Now, everyone, I'm sure, is feeling very excited because we have the game segment. And this week, in a change from our previous weeks, we're doing just a stand-up quiz. So we have a buzz-in round game, which means that obviously anyone at home can play along. And I'll be asking questions. And whoever buzzes in first can answer. And if they're wrong, then the other two of you have a chance to buzz in. And then if you get that wrong, then the last person can just take their time and try and steal the point for getting the right answer. So I have 7 questions here, ranging in difficulty, because obviously, don't want to sort of make anyone at home find it too tough or too easy either. So is everyone ready? What I want you to do is I want you to come up with your own specific buzzer. Just it could be any sound, anything you want to do to make it so that you're buzzing in. So Ricardo, please give me your buzzer so I know. Bzz. Okay. And Mauro, what's your buzzer?
Sorry, it has to be different than the...
Yeah, it's going to be different. It could be a word, it could be a sound. It could be a word or sound. There you go. Okay, brilliant. And Jerry, what's your buzzer? Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much. So I'm going to be listening out for these sounds. I might forget who's who, but no, I won't. I've got it. Okay, right. So we'll start with the first question and buzz in whenever, okay? So you can cut me off if you like. Now I'm going to butcher this name, but Laszlo Hajens famously purchased a pizza on the now known Bitcoin Pizza Day, which is May the 22nd. But in what year did he purchase the Papa John pizzas with Bitcoin?
2011.
Nope, that's incorrect.
No.
Anyone else? Who's going to come and steal it? Come on.
2013.
Nope. Jerry, you have all the time in the world here. You don't even have to buzz in.
2010.
2010 is correct. That's it. Well done. Okay, so that's a point to Jerry. Okay, we'll move swiftly on. Bitcoin's function was purposely designed in order to solve a specific trust problem, which is often described using an army from 600 AD. What is that problem called?
Byzantine general.
sound first, because Ricardo didn't buzz. Jerry, you got it. You definitely get that one. You buzzed enthusiastically enough and gave the answer. Yes, so that is 2 points to Jerry. Come on, guys, we've got to see if you can catch up. So the third one, this one's pulling away from Bitcoin a little bit here, into the altcoin territory. The company Ripple was originally founded in 2012 under a different name and changed it in 2015. What was its original name? I thought this would be a hard one, you see, since not many people know that much about it.
But didn't Ripple existed before Bitcoin?
Yeah, just under a different name. Anyone at all? Okay, well, I can try. I don't know how I can give anyone any ideas. Let's think. Okay. It's got the word coin in it. I don't know how I'm going to give. I'm just going to have to give the answer. I can't think of any way because you guys look like you have no idea. It's OpenCoin. I had no idea that was what it was called, but apparently that's what the company was officially called. Okay, right. So 2 points to Jerry. Yes, exactly. It was meant to be open, but I suppose the ledger is open, but yeah, it's a bit centralized otherwise. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 more questions. Okay, Jerry is ahead with 2, but there's still room for you guys to pull back in and someone to win the coveted prize of a clap. Number 4, how old was Vitalik Buterin when he wrote the Ethereum white paper?
19.
Oh, geez. Okay, well, I mean, although that was without a buzz, so I don't know. I don't know what to do there. That's tough. I feel like we had a buzz. I'm going to give him half a point for this.
All right.
But yeah, you're going to get half a point. So this may still to play for. It's still all to play for. You got 2.5, Jerry. But this is the lesson. You got a buzz. Yes, 19. And he is now 26 years old. I'd say I wouldn't have got that. I knew he was like young, but I couldn't remember. I would have just been guessing. Okay, next one. Oh, this one's pretty easy. So, but remember, we have to buzz. What hashing algorithm does Bitcoin use?
SHA-256.
Yep. Ricardo on to 1 point there. 2 more questions. What was the Bitcoin / US dollar exchange rate when it first started trading online?
0.10 cents.
So you went for 10 cents. It's not that, but we'll bear that in mind. So 10 cents. Okay.
It was less than a penny. It was less than a penny.
It's a penny. Do you want to give me a rough go at it?
I'm going to say 0.01.
Okay, so we've got 10 cents, 0.01. Okay, not correct, but we'll wait and see who's closest. Mauro, what's your guess here?
10 cents.
10 cents, okay. I'm afraid Ricardo is closest. It's 0.03 cents. And that was on bitcoinmarket.com, which is now defunct, I believe, in March 2010. So, quite a while ago now. Okay, so that does mean that Ricardo, you're now into. Okay, so it's all to play for. Okay, Mauro, I'm sorry, you seem to have dropped out of the race, but Ricardo, Jerry, we've got 2.5 versus 2, so there's a full point here for grabs, and it's getting tense. Okay, this one is sadly quite an easy question, so whoever buzzes in first basically is going to get this. What is a node?
It's a computer verifies the blockchain of the Bitcoin network.
Yeah, there you go. I tell you what, that's a come behind win. That's the sort of thing you see in the Super Bowl, a thing of legend. Well done, Ricardo. That's fantastic. You win the coveted prize this week of a clap.
Awesome.
Well done. And yeah, I'll try and remember to keep tally of the scores, so eventually someone can actually get a gift for this, maybe a gift card or something. All right, well, we'll move on now to our final segment this week before our good news outro, which is to speak to Mauro and get a bit of an understanding and an insight into, you know, his life and sort of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in Spain and Argentina. And yeah, as I said, you're a proud Argentinian resident of Spain. I guess first question, you spoke a little bit about COVID pandemic and the way Spain's dealing with things, but how long have you been in Spain for?
I've been almost 4 years now.
And I guess, so about 4 years, what's the scene like when it comes to sort of things like cryptocurrency and Bitcoin specifically? Like what is it like over there in Spain? Like how is the adoption at the moment, would you say?
Well, it's not that much as much as in Argentina. It's definitely a smaller community. And I believe it's more shitcoiner than Argentina.
Okay.
When I first came, I was super excited to go to a meetup. And the meetup was called Sushi and Blockchain, something like that. And I said, oh, excellent. I'm going to eat sushi and have a beer and have a talk about Bitcoin. And no, it was about the IBM Hyperledger and how you can track sushi moving from different countries, some crap like that, completely useless. and no sushi, but yes, we had some beer. But yeah, it was the only meetup that I went. Never again, because it was all about shitcoining and blockchain, blah, and I was interested about Bitcoin. And then the main organizers turned into Bitcoin Cash, so even worse. I didn't pay much attention to the local scene here, but yes, I made friends online and some good Bitcoiners here and there. In the latest 2 years, I met awesome people like Lunaticoin, for example, who lives in Barcelona, and other people really, really cool. The scene is growing. There's a growing vibrant community, but it's comparing size with Argentina is very low.
I guess, like, if you had to try and put your finger on it, why do you think that is the case? I mean, I know obviously Argentina, bigger country and things like that, but I mean, why do you think that is? Is it due to the stability of the currency or?
No, in number of people, it's the same size. It's very similar to Spain.
Okay.
But in Argentina, the thing is, here in Spain, they have the euro. If they still have the peseta, then the situation will have been different. But they have a stronger currency, pretty stable compared to the rest of the national currencies, and a good financial system. So they didn't need Bitcoin until today as much as in Argentina, that the currency is a complete trash, right? So there's a big difference there. Here, the government cannot print the euro. Mm. So the euro has been a great thing for the European people. If countries like Spain would kept their shitcoin fiat, then things would have been much, much worse as they are now.
Yeah, understood. So I guess the correlation is generally based, I suppose, between the actual currency people are using as their fiat currency not being as good, basically, and therefore they're more inclined to go and try and discover cryptocurrencies, which I definitely think that makes sense, for sure. I suppose when it comes to Bitcoin then, what is it that brought you to Bitcoin in the first place? Like, how did you hear about it? How did you find out about it in the very, very beginning?
Well, I was always interested in economics. I studied economic science and management, and I was always also interested in startups and in the coding and systems. So I did some basic coding from my early jobs, and so I was always interested in those two worlds. And I also became more libertarian with the time. I used to be a progressive, as most Argentinians are. Our education just inject us socialism through the veins. But at 20, when I was 20, I went to the US to live 1 year, to go to the university there in an exchange program. And I started to learn a lot of things on free markets and the change in my mind. And then I went to live to the US when I was 30 in 2012. I lived 2 years in Texas, and that complete the my switch to more the liberal ideology. And those three things combined made me read, I think it was an article in a Slashdot website about Bitcoin in 2011 or something like that, or 2012. But I disregarded it completely. I just read it, and I said, like, okay, it's another experiment. Didn't have much faith in it. And then in 2013, there was starting to, some price action was starting to pick up. There was a rally early that year that went from 10 to 100 and something, or 200. So that got a bit my interest. And then somebody, I started to look, search for information in Twitter, and somebody said, why would you buy this in Amazon if you can buy it on the Silk Road? And I said, uh-huh. And he put a link, an Onion link. And I say, okay. I open the Onion link, and I see the Silk Road, and I see heroin, cocaine, marijuana, all like if it was an Amazon with stars and reviews and everything worked with Bitcoin. So when I saw that, I said, holy shit, this definitely works. And it was like an Eureka moment. And after that, I spent like hours and hours and hours reading about it. And then I couldn't stop going through the rabbit hole from there. And it was like a click in my mind.
Sort of fell in love with Bitcoin, I guess. Yeah, it's funny because I've found myself getting like more libertarian, kind of out of a sort of socialist kind of like movement over my life as I've gotten older as well. And I also wrote it off when I heard about Bitcoin back in, I think, 2012 in a documentary about the Silk Road. But yeah, that's interesting to hear. And I suppose like when it comes to Bitcoin and crypto in general, I suppose since you've been through that process of being a newcomer, what is your advice that you'd give to any newcomers who are looking to get into Bitcoin for the first time? They've just found out about it. Maybe they're listening now. What would you advise them, I suppose? What would you say are the things not to do and some things to do?
Don't trade. That's the first advice. To do trading. That's we all go through that stage that we think it's easy, and we do a couple of good trades, and we say, okay, I'm gonna quit my shop, and I'm gonna do this a couple of times a month, and then just do nothing. And I lost money doing that. I lost money doing that. And then my second advice is work hard and save. And don't try to live beyond your means. Try to live below your means. And then when you're comfortable, I don't know, if you are 45 years old, 50 years old, maybe you can start, and you have some savings, you can start enjoying more. But if you enjoy too soon, then probably you're going to lose it. So something like that happened to me, because when I discovered Bitcoin, I was living in the US with my wife and kids. My wife couldn't work. I was in a training program, so my salary wasn't very good. I couldn't save much, but I put something into Bitcoin. And then I had to move back to Argentina because my visa ended. I couldn't get another one. And In Argentina, I made a budget for saving like 10% of my salary, something like that. I rented a gated community house, paid private school, you know, a nice life. And I thought I was going back to the US, but we tried several times and I didn't make it to the lottery. And then my company didn't want to keep paying lawyers to try to get me in. I thought it was something momentary. And things in Argentina are always volatile with governments and such. And the cost of living in Argentina went doubled in dollars a year, doubled in dollars. So from saving 10% a month, in a year I was losing like 30-40% every month. And I didn't want to go to my parents for help or such, have some savings. So I had to sell most of my savings in that situation to cover that before I moved to Spain. So that's part of my advice. There will be some eventual things that you might need money. Don't bet on that you have everything solved too soon. Like work hard, buy Bitcoin, save as much as you can, be humble, live beyond below your means until you feel more comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, couldn't have said it better myself, actually. Like, that's a huge part of how I try to live. Like, I try to enjoy myself and have fun, but try and live below my means at any time possible compared to a lot of other people I know. So, yeah, fantastic advice. I couldn't agree any more, to be honest. I guess the last question I've got for you here is when it comes to Bit Refill, obviously, you're marketing, head of marketing here. And I guess the question is, like, how did you first come across BitRefill? Was it that you were trying to live on crypto, or is this something you came along sort of earlier on in time, or what's the story there?
No, I've found it about a year or 10 months after BitRefill launched. It was only mobile top-ups by then. And I found it because I was looking for a job, I wanted to work for a Bitcoin company. I was completely done with the non-Bitcoin world. And searching in Angel List, I came across BitRefill. And I said, okay, this is a cool product. I like it. I sent them a message. And Sergey, the owner, one of the owners, and now CEO, contacted me, and we had a call, and I started to do some stuff a couple hours a week for them. That's how I discovered BitRefill, and after that I discovered them. I started to become a client because I had a prepaid phone, and so I started to use BitRefill for that. And I remember I went to a lake house for vacations a week, and I didn't have internet. And I was on vacation, but I had to finish something that I had to send. And I didn't have internet there. And BitRefill saved me completely. I couldn't believe it at the time. Now you say, okay, yeah. But at that moment, 2015, refilling your phone in the middle of nowhere with Bitcoin, and I was able to do my job, connect to the internet, and send my report. That was something completely amazing. And after that, I fell in love with the company and started working more and more and more with the years.
That's okay. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting to hear like how that's the case, and I suppose everyone has their own story on how they discover the site and how it helps them sort of live on crypto. I mean, for me, it was like a close friend of mine paid me back for something when he was staying in England with me, and paid me back in Lightning on Blue Wallet, and kind of introduced me to Lightning. Like, I hadn't really come across it before. It was a while back. And yeah, just seeing that you could buy a physical item, it was like almost mind blowing to me. Like, I'd heard of like the odd place where Bitcoin is accepted, but it's not really something you kind of see yourself doing back in, I think it was early 2018, I believe, from memory. But you know, then you find yourself actually getting a physical item pretty quickly in exchange for some Bitcoin Lightning, and you're thinking, how the, this is amazing. So I was just like a huge fan from the get-go. It's incredible what it can do. And yeah, my same friend used it to, you know, save himself, really. And I'm sure everyone has similar stories. I guess before we move on to the final good news outro, to give everyone a bit of positivity, Ricardo, Jerry, have you got any sort of questions you were thinking of asking at all? Or
I just wanted to ask, Mauro, where do you see the adoption of cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin in particular, in Spain, and over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years?
Well, it will evolve similarly to Argentina and other places that are already ahead, because the euro, the European Central Bank, they are just printing huge amounts that they didn't before, and COVID changed that for the worst in a dramatic way. I mean, people here in Spain think that the money grows on trees, you know. They say, okay, we are locked down, we cannot work for a year, we are in lockdown, we cannot do shit, we destroyed the tourism. No worries, no biggie. Because we're gonna get the checks from the government, like 1,000 euros a month, it's fine. You know, they always think that the government saves you, and it's going to explode in an incredible way. So I don't see any other outcome as more adoption and more infrastructure, more community, more stores, more everything, like other places.
Fantastic. Thanks.
I guess makes you think of Money Heist on, I don't know if you guys have seen that, or Casa de Papel, I think it is in Spanish, on Netflix, but that was like a huge Bitcoin advert for me. It was amazing. Like seeing him talking about like the printing of the money, the revolution, you know, I was like, this is it. This is everything for me. There's like instant top nice. 5 show of all time. Like, you know, I couldn't believe it.
Season 5 is coming soon, I believe.
Yeah, well, I still need to watch part 3, which is like season 2, I think, isn't it? Like people call part 1 and 2 season 1.
Part 3 is the gold, right? It's the gold bank. And the,
yeah, so yeah.
Fiat, gold, and the last one, we don't know yet.
We'll find out, yeah. It'd be awesome if it was digital currency related. No, that's awesome. Yeah, Ricardo, anything you wanted to ask at all? Or?
No, I'm good.
Okay, then. Well, in that case, we'll leave everyone with some lovely positive news. So we'll get 60 seconds of a quick rundown, just so that you know, leave this podcast on a happier note than you came in, and hopefully having learned something. So let's go. New prostate cancer test makes diagnosis happen in 20 minutes with near 100% accuracy. A snowy owl has been spotted in New York Central Park for the first time in 130 years. $14 billion have been raised for the Great Green Wall to continue planting trees across Africa. Billionaire Mark Cuban's new drug company is producing low-cost drugs, enabling prices for consumers to be up to 90% cheaper. Miami has been able to bring basketball fans back into the arena thanks to a new COVID-sniffing dog. And Bernie Sanders memes and mittens have now raised over $1.8 million for charity. A local community has pulled together in order to restore the house of a World War II veteran in order to allow him to go home. And finally, Mexico City has now enacted a new ban on single-use plastic and straws this year, doing their part to help save the planet. Well, after that, I'd just like to say thank you to everyone who's tuned in, and thank you so much, Mauro, for coming to join us on this podcast. It's been awesome to hear like what you've had to say about your experiences with crypto and your advice, and I couldn't agree with more really with what you've said. So I really appreciate you taking the time to join us. Is there any final words, anything you want to plug before you head out?
No. Thank you all, and let's just be alert and be growing the community and be brothers between us, Bitcoiners and crypto enthusiasts in general. That things are gonna move a lot this year, and we have to be alert and be brethren in arms between us and help each other.
Awesome, absolutely. All right, well, thank you for tuning, everyone. Take care, and we'll see you very soon. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Stamattina mi sono alzato e ho trovato l'invaso. Oh.
Oh partigiano, portami via. Oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao.